Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Tennis.com podcast. We have a special episode today. I'm Nina Pantic, your co-host, joined in this episode by Irina Falcone.
Hey guys, how's it going?
And our guest is Christy Ahn. Christy, thank you for joining us.
No, thanks so much for having me, you guys.
We saw you on Tennis Channel Live and the studio set, so we thought, you know what, you know, if you can go on Tennis Channel, you can go on our podcast too, so it makes sense.
Yeah, super excited.
What was that experience like on Tennis Channel? Was it like an actual Skype chat where you videoed in? Was it live?
Yeah, I guess it was live, but I couldn't see them, so they could see me. So it was kind of weird. I felt like I was just on a phone call, but everyone's watching me. And then I tried to look semi-professional, so I put on, you know, like a normal shirt, but I was wearing sweats and like fuzzy socks because you couldn't see it.
You got to do what you got to do to survive. So speaking of Christy, we are in the midst of what is honestly a mind-blowing period of our lives. The coronavirus has stopped everything from my beloved bars to tennis to life, health. Everything is kind of in flux and everyone is sitting at home doing literally nothing but waiting and reading the news and freaking out. How has your quarantine been going?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I was just thinking about it this morning because we're, you know, since Indian Wells, it's been about 2 weeks, and it's only been about 2 weeks, and our schedule is June at least, and we're only in the end of March. So I was just thinking, wow, that's a, you know, and well, it's raining out right now, but I don't feel comfortable right now going out to parks, like to play tennis, to practice even. So I'm just trying to shadow swing in my basement and not completely lose my feel. But other than that, I love staying indoors. I love just, I have, this is home for me. So I can kind of keep myself pretty occupied. I got a lot of instruments, so I'll play those for a couple hours. And then, as you guys know, I make TikToks for the rest of my life. I have a little bit of a home gym set up as well. So I'm able to sort of, keep at least a little bit of rhythm.
Yeah, it's funny that you were mentioning first off about the tennis courts thing, because today was actually a day that I was actually going to go and see if I remember how to play, you know, just in case I forgot it. Because Andy Gross, whom you know, he was like, you know, just go out and just, you know, hit a little bit. And I was like, all right, you know, what's an hour going to do for my life? And sure enough, I show up to these courts at a club, mind you, like it's a gated community. And as I'm getting out of my car, the guy goes, hey, you're not going inside the tennis courts, are you? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, I'm actually locking them up right now. And I was like, holy cow. So it's unbelievable, like the amount of things that are affected. But then on the other hand, I'm like, okay, is my life really going to change if I don't hit for, you know, 1 month? Because guess what? We still have another 2 months before we can actually hit, you know, a, you know, ball at actual tennis tournament. So yeah, it's been interesting to say the least.
Yeah, it'd be great if there was kind of like walls. Not that I can necessarily hit on the wall up of my house, but you know, if I could, that would, I feel like, make it a lot easier, but that's not exactly feasible for me right now. So I know in the next town over for me, there's a wall, a hitting wall, but again, they're locking down parks.
It's funny that you mention about the wall thing, because we have a 3-car garage behind our house, and like we have maybe about 45 feet between the house and the garage. And I was like, well, I can use it as a wall for like some volleys maybe. Like I saw Bjorn Changelo, like he actually was volleying like against the wall the other day, and there was some grass underneath, so that's all you could do. But yeah, it's been amazing to see the amount of home gyms and like home workouts that have been like just summoned because of this whole thing. But yeah, there's still a lot of hours in the day, so tell us more about your TikToks, girl, because you are literally just taking over. Like the one that I saw yesterday with the Mean Girls like dub, like lip syncing. Oh my gosh, I died. Where are you getting your inspiration from? And like, it's just been awesome to watch.
Thanks. No, I've been on TikTok for about a year now, and I just, I was just a lurker, just watching videos. And then I started making them around June, and they were terrible. So I was on private with a couple of my friends. They were like slowly improving, the lip syncing started getting better, and my like actual content started getting, funnier. And then this quarantine happened, and I was like, I just thought of some stuff that was kind of relevant. The French Open one that one kind of blew up. And I don't know, I feel like people were like looking for something to keep them entertained during this time, keep their mind off of the fact that we're all stuck at home. So I've just been trying to help keep people entertained, even if it's for a couple seconds, couple minutes of the day.
Okay, I've got a question about TikTok, because I just started an account 2 days ago and I'm lurking. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to make a video, because it doesn't seem like something I could possibly do. But is it a lot of repeating? So like if you see somebody else do something, you're like, okay, wait, I want to try and steal their idea? Or was the RG thing your own creation? I want to think it's your own creation.
Well, so the TikTok, basically there's different ways to go about it. There's, you know, the dancers, there's the artists, there's people who just are really good at lip syncing. And you don't even know that they're using someone else's audio. But for me, I use it, there's sort of a segment where people, you use someone else's audio, but you come up with your own scenarios. So like the French Open one, where it's like, Hey, and I was just thinking, like, that's probably the Grand Slam meeting. And I thought the same thing. I thought there's no way, like, these are so funny. How could I possibly think of that? But I just felt like the more I watched, and I've lost hours of sleep, I was in Japan last year, and when I started scrolling, the sun was well up in the sky. And when I finally stopped, but they also have, if you scroll enough, they have, TikTok actually has people like videos show up that's like, it's okay, like, please take a break. You've been scrolling a lot. Like, these videos will be there tomorrow. Go to sleep. And I had that happen to me last night, and I was like, that's a good idea. I should probably stop scrolling now.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Okay, but the beauty of the situation right now is I don't have any, or no one will have as much guilt doing stuff like that. That's why TikTok is probably blowing up. Every player is getting accounts, because it's like, you don't feel that guilt of, I should probably could do something with my life. It's like, no, I should just continue. I started playing video games. I don't even play video games. I've never played video games. But I wanted to ask you another follow-up for your videos. You have the one where you're cleaning the floor and working out at the same time. That is genius. Because I do feel this sudden, and Irina can relate, the sudden urge to just like clean my house, but also to work out. So you kind of combined it.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, not everybody has a home gym set up. And I was just thinking, like, what are the two things people want to do most right now? And it's clean and exercise. So I was just thinking, I saw Ali Risk do her little workout with the detergent. And I was like, I think I can take that a step further. And of course, I have all the time in the world. So it was originally just going to be a quick couple of second video. And then I just had all this time and thought of more exercises, decided to do a voiceover and put it over Never Gonna Give You Up. I spent that took up a good chunk of the day, but I gotta say that was my first content that I put out for the quarantine, and I'm pretty proud of it.
That's amazing. Well, don't stop. Can't stop, won't stop. Please do not stop posting, because we're enjoying them. I know for myself, there, Nina, you're 100% right on the no shame thing. I mean, Travis and I were just taking it to like the complete embarrassment level of like 1,000. And I'm just like, hey, I'm not going to see anyone till June. Hopefully they'll forget about it by then. But let's talk about, you know, the fact that you are a tennis player, other than a TikTok star. And the last time I saw you was actually at the Indian Wells Challenger. This is my first question to you. Obviously, you're part of the WTA Council. What was your reaction like when you saw the the message like come out like, hey, Indian Wells is canceled, no big deal. I just want to know, what were you doing? Like, but you probably already had an idea, right?
So the day before, so Qualy started Monday, or was supposed to start Monday. And as of Saturday night, so 2 days before, they said, we are 100% prepared to play. If we have to, we will play behind closed doors. But they were, you know, ready for the fans and everything. The whole thing, they did glove protection with ball kids. Ball kids wouldn't be touching the towels, you know, keeping autographing sessions to a minimum, the whole shebang. And then Sunday morning, I guess there was a positive confirmed case kind of right down the road. But I didn't hear anything. I was literally in the training room. It was probably around 2-3 o'clock or maybe 4. And I got an email, urgent meeting at, you know, 5 o'clock on site for the player council. And my initial thought was, what could possibly be so urgent that it has to happen right, you know, today, that it can't wait until tomorrow? And it occurred to me that the only feasible explanation would be that Indian Wells is canceling. So went into that meeting. We sat down with Tommy Haas and Raymond Moore, and they explained the situation. There was that one positive case. There were 5 pending cases in the area. Obviously, Indian Wells is and the area, surrounding area, is full of retired people. The demographic's much older. And this positive case, also before she was showing symptoms, she was interacting with her club. Like, she was living life totally normal. She flew in from DC. So she interacted with a lot of people. So even though there was only one confirmed case, the next couple of days, it totally, you know, who knows what could have happened or what actually did happen. So it was just really bad timing that this happened the day before. But at the same time, it's also really good that it happened before the event started. And Raymond Moore was very emotional when he told us this. He was, you know, this was his baby. They're so proud of this event. Obviously, players love it. Everybody loves it. So it was really heartbreaking to see him tell us the news. And I guess they took playing behind closed doors off the table. And I guess, you know, you have to respect their decision. That's millions of dollars that they wouldn't be getting, that they couldn't even make. BNP Paribas, they want to keep their standard, their product at a certain caliber. So while it was very frustrating for players to have to pivot their plans the day before, obviously now in retrospect, can you imagine if we kept going like the next, I think one or two days later, that's when Trump announced that the flights from Europe would be canceled. So all our European players, like, they have to go back home. So it would have just been absolute chaos, which it was already chaos. So imagine that magnitude even more so.
It is insane.
Yeah, very good decision. Go ahead.
In hindsight, that's only a couple of weeks ago, and now it's like, you cannot imagine if that tournament had actually gone on. It would have been beyond chaos, and it would have been a massive health concern. But at the time, it almost felt like it was a little bit dramatic. But you're on the WTA
for
council.
Sure.
You're in the council. So when the decisions came about, okay, we're going to cancel tournaments till May 2nd and now June 8th, were you part of that decision? Were you the first to find out about stuff like that? Or are you finding out the same way as everyone else is finding out?
So we are privy to finding things out before they get announced to the players. But we are not necessarily involved with the decisions to cancel. So for example, so Charleston was a little bit tricky because the men announced that they were canceling for the next 6 weeks. Steve said, we need to speak with our tournaments first, and we want to give them, you know, the respect and communication first before. And now, obviously, you know, the way that things were unfolding, they were going to get canceled or postponed. But I think, like, Charleston, obviously, it technically didn't make sense that we hadn't officially announced a cancellation, but at the same time, Steve wanted to talk to Bob, the tournament director, the tournament owner, and I think also like the government was also involved there. And they really wanted to hold it. They were so pumped, and obviously another great event that players love. But it didn't make sense because if Europeans were going home, we couldn't have them come back to the States. So I think the WTA sent out an email to the players that we're gonna wait until tomorrow to officially announce the decision. And obviously players were, you know, annoyed and irritated already with this situation that was going on. But the next day Charleston officially announced. So it's I understand that it feels like the WTA is like slow to announce things, but at the same time, I think they're trying to be respectful to the tournaments and everyone, all the parties involved, because it is a tough situation for everybody. And then they let us know that the Europe tournaments were kind of all going to get canceled, but you know, to keep it in house. And then they sent the announcement to the players and then effectively to the public. But we don't, you know, we don't get to decide whether or not we're hosting or having a tournament or if we're canceling it, but we do get to hear it before the rest of the players do.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Hey guys, Irina here. Today we're with WTA star Christy Ahn, who is telling us everything there is to know about TikTok. Keep listening.
Let's talk about the past, I don't know, let's say maybe 6 to 8 months of your career. I mean, you've really had a massive breakthrough, cracking the top 100 for the first time. That US Open run that was just iconic and so memorable. And then it kind of all started maybe in San Jose for you. When you look back and now you're stuck in this pause. Did you feel like your momentum was really going pretty well towards 2019 going into 2020?
Yeah. It just felt like everything was clicking. Like, it probably started from, Wimbledon, and I qualified there for the first time I qualified for a slam into the main draw of a slam for the first time in 11 years. And I feel like that was almost like a mental barrier that I've been sort of holding in the back of my mind. So to be able to finally play, to qualify into the main event, I feel like I just kind of a lot of internal pressure was released and effectively allowed me to play my best tennis. It just kept going and going, and I love, playing at home. It was great. I saw you at the Bronx as well. And, you know, that was a event that was put together last second, but it was just so, like, I stayed at home for that. So it was just great to be playing in the New York area.
Oh yeah, the Bronx. I remember that. And you had that big arm sleeve. Is that, you know, I remember another thing. I'm like, oh yeah, Christine, the robo arm. Yeah, surely by now you're going to be able to fix that arm all the way up. According to TikTok, maybe not, but but after the Bronx, you went to the U.S. Open and crushed it. You won your first ever Grand Slam main draw match, followed by two more, reached the fourth round as a wild card. I mean, what did that mean to you? And now it's something that you have, no matter what happens in the next year with the Grand Slams. I mean, you made the fourth round of a major.
You know, it's cliche, but it's so surreal. I played, you know, main draw when I was 16, so 11 years before. And when you're that young, you just think, oh yeah, there's next year, I'll do it next year. And then the years pass, and all of a sudden a decade has passed, and you're like, it's not happening, is it? And you know, fears start to grow as you get older, doubt creeps in, and then you know, I draw Kuznetsova first round, who just made the finals of Cincy and is playing unreal ball. And I saw that draw, but I was like, I mean, what a cool opportunity. I'm playing a Grand Slam champion in my home slam. Like, even if I lose, like, this is going to be an amazing atmosphere, like something to that I'll always remember. And then all of a sudden, okay, I won that. I won my next round. And then I won my next round. It was like, I couldn't even have scripted this if I wanted to.
It was pretty surreal watching it from the TV. I feel like I've known you forever, Christy, and it was pretty amazing to watch. And, you know, one thing that I always find that people ask when you have not necessarily a run like that, but you've kind of elevated your game in a sense, and I mean, you're in a different league per se. Is there anything that you now do that you didn't do before? I know fans always ask, they're like, you know, what's changed? What's new? Is there anything like that that's happened in your tennis life, you think?
Yeah. So for me, one of the biggest things was before this all happened, I moved back home to Jersey in the end of 2018. And I've been living in Florida for the past four years, I think. And I finally made the decision that I wanted to move home. I know that maybe the training here isn't as ideal as somewhere like Florida, but for me, I just wanted to be, you know, I wanted to feel a sense of normalcy when I'm not on court, to be able to hang out with friends and feel like I can make this feel sustainable. And my coach here, Jay Devachetti, he could tell that mentally I was a bit down on myself. And one of the major things that he told me was that you just take your little positives every day and you just keep stacking them. So, you know, when it's a big point, you just tell yourself that, like, literally telling yourself that you can do it and speaking things into existence every day. Oh, I serve better today. You just stack that. Oh, I did this better today. Stack that. So instead of focusing so much on the negatives, doing the 180 of focusing on the positives and things that I could control. And then, you know, when the hard court swing rolled around, Jay mentioned, he was like, remember in March when you were really struggling, at Indian Wells, I played a 3.5 hour match and I ended up winning, but I was just fighting like my butt off for that. And he was like, take that scrappiness, take that mentality that you had there and put it, like, keep applying that, like, don't forget about that chip, because that's something that was so important for me. Was even though I wasn't playing great tennis in March, I was, you know, fighting for every point. And then all of a sudden in August July, when my tennis was actually feeling much better, it's okay, now let's make sure that we really use that chip for March, the mental aspect. So just being able to stack things on top of each other, and sometimes you lose a couple chips, you know, they fall off, but it's okay. You just keep building and building. And then all of a sudden it's like, look where you were back in March and look where you are now. And you just took a little bit of positive every day and then you built something great.
You're really putting into words what the grind and the paying off after so much of the grind looks like. It's really impressive the way you're kind of describing it really well. And your unique story, because you went to Stanford and graduated 4 years. I mean, you got a degree. And I remember before the US Open, maybe it was right around the US Open, reading a story about how maybe your family wanted you to actually go get a job and that tennis was actually holding you back from what could be like some kind of illustrious, proper career in the real world. Did you feel that the Stanford degree was more of something that you could fall back on, or something that was giving you pressure to, like, okay, maybe I should stop playing tennis and go get a job?
I mean, it's definitely a double-edged sword, because, you know, when you're doing well in tennis, it's like, oh, or not even doing well. It's just when you're playing tennis, it's, oh, I could be doing, you know, hopefully I'd be able to use my degree and have a 9-to-5 job and something that I actually love and establish a sense of normalcy. But at the same time, it's in the back of your, like, it's just, I don't know how to describe it. It's holding you back, but you also have the net under you, which could be a good thing or it could be a bad thing. Like, if you remove the net altogether, you have no choice. You must cross the tightrope. Otherwise you will hit the ground. But at the same time, it's there. So you know that if you do fall, like, it's okay. There's a net there to save you. So, you know, there's a reason why you take the Serenas, the Sharapovas, those, they had no choice. They only had one option, and that's why they were as good as they were, or part of the reason why, and it adds to their greatness. Whereas I could never put myself in that situation, because if things ever got so dire, I would just bail out. I'd be like, all right, this is not for me. I will go get my corporate job or whatever now. But I was pretty close to it in beginning of 2017. I was probably ranked around 250 or so, and just kind of, I lost the plot for a little bit, and decided that I was, by the end of 2017, I was going to hang up the rackets and then start pursuing a normal job. And maybe that was part of the reason why I took so much pressure off myself and started playing really good tennis, because then the script just flipped altogether, and then I'm still doing it.
Dude, honestly, like, listening to you is inspiring so much and, like, pumping me up. This is awesome to hear. I remember actually talking to you. I don't know if you remember this. We were in the... Well, yes, that one too. I remember we were in Tyler, and it was before the tournament even started, and we were practicing, and I don't remember what you said, but I just remember telling you something to where it's like, hey, you know, just win this tournament, Christy. Like, let's just meet in the finals or something, and, like, you know, let's just win it. Like, why not? And sure enough, we met in the semis, and you won the tournament, and you just played amazing tennis, and you ended up getting the wild card into Oz Open after that, and that was at the end of 2017, correct?
Yeah. I had a really good summer clay and grass season, and then the hard courts came up, and, you know, I was pretty close to making it into main draw of US Open, and I just put so much pressure on myself that I was having so much anxiety, and, like, I just could not play, and I was focusing on the wrong things altogether. And so when the fall rolled around, I was pretty down. I didn't do well in Asia as well as I wanted. Lost first round in Macon, and funnily enough, also there, the wild card, you know, challenge is going on, best of three tournaments, and I lost first round in Macon, and Ila Tomljanović's mom was there, and she's like, so, you know, how's the wild card looking? And I said, I don't know, I lost first round here to have to win the next one probably to win it, or to even have a chance. And she's like, so just do it, just win it. I was like, I mean, that'd be great. She's like, no. And I was, and, you know, I took that into, it was in the back of my mind to Tyler, and then we spoke, and I was like, why does everyone believe in me, but I can't even believe in myself? Like, and that's kind of just been the theme of the, you know, couple years coming out of college as well. But then, yeah, like, we had our conversation, and it was like, all right, yeah, let's do this. Why not? Like, it only takes one good week. It only takes one good match. It only takes one good point at a time. Like, if you really just break it down, it's quite simple. And then, yeah, I played some of my best tennis that week as well.
It was awesome. So just a question. You can answer this if you want to. Do your parents still believe that you should just stop and go get a corporate job somewhere?
Oh yeah, that's never stopped. they're immigrants. They totally believe in security, and you know, my dad, he's like, haha, I'm notorious now, because he showed up in the article of the New York Times, but. You know, he's very, like, kind of, I mean, everyone's kind of stuck in the same boat, but even tennis players more now, especially, you know, we're not making a dime. We can't work from home. We don't have a salary, and we don't know how long we're going to be out for. And he's kind of like, this is the, I mean, obviously, you know, I did well enough last year and got, you know, first round of Australia this year, to sort of help. I don't have to worry about my finances, but it's, to him, it's not so much about the finances, it's about the security. It's about, what if you get injured? Like, how are you spending your time the longer that you're away, that you, I think he kind of views the quote unquote real world as like a closing door. But from what I'm hearing, it's kind of the opposite, that the more I can accomplish in tennis, the more doors it opens to my second career. But you know, it's also maybe it's a generational thing. Maybe it's a cultural thing. But you know, they're obviously very happy. They're very happy when I did well, I think, especially because they saw how hard I've worked, how many heartbreaks I've gone through. So for them, it wasn't so much of, you know, they were eating their words, but it was just like, they saw me happy. They know how much effort, how much I put into it. So for them, it's, you know, they got to see their child live out her dream. And I guess in that sense, that's what was so euphoric for everybody.
Hey everyone, you're listening to the Tennis.com podcast with special guest Christy Ahn. She's telling us what it's like to be privy to big decisions on the WTA Council. Keep listening. I do see their point in a way, but you've worked your entire life from when you were a small kid to make it as a tennis player in some capacity. Yeah, the college degree, but everyone dreams of second week of Grand Slams and things like that. But I also see their point of like, oh yeah, the corporate world likes to hire young people, but like you're 27 and the more you accomplish in tennis will 1000% set you up for, I'm not sure what kind of job you're seeking afterwards, but I definitely think that people that have resumes stacked with like tennis accomplishments do have a leg up in most industries. I mean, it depends on what you're into, but I do see the logic of what they're saying, but I definitely think if you're happy and you're staying positive, you should keep playing. And hopefully you guys get back out on the court soon. But I had one more. So when you look ahead, let's say hypothetically looking ahead and the tours start up again in the summer, will you be able to put together a schedule? And you said you have that a bit of money to get you through. Do you feel confident in being able to line up a schedule and hop right back into it? Because right now you're ranked 96. So, I mean, I feel like everyone's going to be just going absolutely ham crazy trying to sign up for tournaments.
Yeah, it's probably going to be super chaotic. We also, on the council, we're trying to find the best way for the point system, for the points to come off, because that's a huge issue for everybody, really, who did remotely well in 2019. Because if you did well in the clay season, you know, you don't even get the chance to play. So what happens to those points? And then if you did well later on in the year, and maybe not so well during the clay season, you don't even get it, like you're defending right off the bat. So we're going through every possible iteration of how to make it fair for everybody. We're putting up numbers, doing the research, trying to figure out what's simplest but most effective for everybody. And yeah, that was another issue, was when points come off, depending on how points come off, if every player is signing up for every tournament, that's just going to be absolute chaos. We've lost, you know, Rome and Madrid, two massive tournaments, with a lot of points, and a lot of job opportunities. And then if we do resume in June, you know, it's grass. There's obviously really great tournaments, but it's a very short season. You can't even, I can't even explain it. Like, if it would be so much easier if we could have, it would still be insanely difficult, but it would make life a lot easier if we knew, like, okay, June, we are 100% coming back, because then at least we can start to scramble and put together last minute situations. But, or I mean, we would have months before, you know, it's happening, versus, okay, suddenly it's May, it's mid-May. Okay, do we push these back as well? You can't really get the grass season back because of, you know, the summer, the weather, the grass conditions. So then do you scratch that? What happens? Oh my God. And so, yeah, we're like, even though this quarantine's like very, you know, calm and whatever, these meetings have been, we have to figure it out, but it's almost feels like picking a needle out of a haystack. Cause there's so many, factors, there's so many different variables going on.
It's really not easy. Honestly, like listening to you talk about it, I'm like getting stressed out just like thinking about points and stuff, because I'm like, oh my God. And I mean, it does suck for what, like some people more than others, to be honest. But at the end of the day, we're all going through it. We're all going to have to experience, you know, defending points at one point. So we've all done it. But I did want to touch on something Nina mentioned. You know, Nina, you asked Chrissy, like, you said that you didn't know what she would do, like, after tennis.
You know, my major was in science, technology, and society. It's one major, not three. And so we were kind of the middlemen between the business and the tech people. So we did some coding. We, you know, were mildly fluent in business. So, now I don't know what that means. So much time has passed. I'm 27. I haven't been in a classroom since 2014. So now I'm just kind of, who knows, what I would go into, but yeah, it's, so just going back to what Nina said on, like my parents, my dad having a good point, he did agree to, help finance my tennis career for 3 years. That was kind of our deal. When I graduated, was he was going to fund my career for 3 years. And if by then I hadn't made it on my own, then I would go find a job. That was our compromise. So 2017 was my third year. And so when I wasn't doing well in the beginning of the year, he was like, guess what? Like, you're gonna have to find a job at the end of the year. So it was very, like, it was going to happen, and I wasn't gonna be bitter or, you know, regret it, because that was our deal. That's, to me, that was fair. It totally made sense. If I didn't make it in 3 years, then okay, like, to get, move on. And his other, logistically, he's a numbers guy, he's an accountant. So for him, it was, why would you do something that has no guarantees, like tennis, and again, has so many variables, versus, you know, with a Stanford degree, you could probably be making a six-figure salary remotely soon. So why would you choose, like, when you look at it on paper, that's a no-brainer, right? Like, guaranteed 5-6-figure salary right off the bat, versus you're going to be at a loss for the first 2.5 years of your career, and then finally start to make some cash when, you know, like, you're just like this, like, even last year, I was literally just paying off my deficits for my first couple of years. So yeah, when you look at it on paper, for sure, it's just funny how this thing called passion and care and something that you've put your whole life into, how that can hold so much weight.
It can
be very pricey and expensive.
Yeah, but on the WTA websites, it looks to me like you two are killing it. Like, Christy's right. Almost at a million. So I think Irina's at like 2. I mean, it looks
very skewed numbers. I know. Very skewed, very skewed.
Well, yeah. And then what a lot of people forget is, you know, tennis is an individual sport. Most of the players are paying for their coach to travel with them. So you're paying double your expenses, and you know, that's flights, hotels, food, you're paying them somewhat of a salary usually. So it's just, you're paying so much money. So even though, and also, like, my $1 million started from when I was like 16 years old, like, and was, you know, just mucking around before going to college. So it's just that, like, people just see the numbers. They're like, oh wow, you've made so much money, and they don't realize how much, you know, how much time has gone by, how much we're actually spending. And so these numbers are completely skewed.
They are, but there's also the potential now as well. Like, looking again, like, once everything gets back to normal, the potential for even more success for you. At least we're all hoping that both of you guys can get back on court soon-ish. But in the meantime, you're both going to keep producing TikToks. Everyone can find Christy. I think it's at Christy On. Very simple. The weird thing now as well is, like, we can just talk for hours and hours and hours because no one has anything else to do. But I want to be respectful of everyone's time, including yours, to go back to your TikToks and clean
the phones. I was
going to
say, I got to make a couple TikToks today. So.
I mean, how many do you make a day? Like, I want more. I feel like I'm obsessed. It happens so fast, from no account to, like, give me more.
I don't really make them during the day. If you look, most of them, like, the lighting is terrible, and that's because I usually start making them around 11 p.m. So the one with the hitting the shin on the serve, I made that one at 1:30 in the morning 2 nights ago. I swear I just scroll all day, get some ideas, and then just start making them at night. Also because I'm more of a night owl, so I have a little bit more energy and just time to process whatever. And then I'll usually post them the next day or something. It's a terrible system.
It's working. You've got a lot of views.
Can't wait to see more of them, Christy. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Of course. This is fun. You know, we killed 50 minutes. Woo!
We did. Guys, we're going to get through the endless void of nothingness until June. We're going to make it there together. From the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, this has been the Tennis.com Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to stay caught up. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app, as well as tennis.com/podcasts. You can also see the videos of our episodes on Tennis Channel's YouTube page and Tennis.com's Facebook page. We're your hosts, Nina Pantic and Irina Falcone. We'd like to thank our team, editor and audio designer and video editor Christina Koseva, producers Alexa March and Sean O'Malley, and executive producers Shelby Coleman, Kyle Einhorn, and Andy Chu.